the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha. When we meditate, each time we meditate, it's like we're standing, let's start out with a curb. We're standing on a curb. We're standing on a curb. Think of someone standing on a curb. And when you meditate, you step off. You step off the curb. Sometimes that step, the distance that you drop seems bigger than at other times. Sometimes it's when you're kind of still within and peaceful and everything's harmonious, it's just an easy slide. It's maybe not a drop at all. It's just very level. When we're more jangled, more troubled, our karma is more active, more distressed, the more agitated, the drop gets bigger. It may start as a little shallow curb and then get to be a big, deep curb. One day it's a cliff with no bottom in sight. The point is, it's always a letting go. And we can sit in that meditation. We can do a lot of time in meditation and not actually really let go. It's not just like predetermined that everyone's going to let go. You have to be willing to let go. There's aspects of the physical position that help us do that, and that goes so far and no further. But it's the attitude that we bring to it above everything else, and the willingness in our heart and the faith in our heart above everything else that helps us let go when the drop is distinctly bigger. What we think of as our kind of normal daily practice is lots of curbs. And some of them it's more difficult than sometimes more difficult than at other times to step off. But they're mostly reasonably easy drops. But we come to a time of real spiritual ripening, where our own spiritual readiness is being brought together with all other conditions, then it's just flinging yourself into the void. For a moment, if I can find it real quickly, in Zen is Eternal Life here, I'll just remind us of that wonderful thing that Obaku said about this. Men are afraid to forget their own minds, fearing to fall through the void with nothing to which they can cling. They do not know that the void, the seeming void, is not really void, but the real realm of the Dharma. This spiritually enlightened nature is without beginning or end, as old as space, neither subject to birth nor destruction, neither existing nor not existing, neither defiled nor pure. It cannot be explained for or sought, comprehended by wisdom or knowledge, explained in words, contacted materially, or reached by meritorious achievement. If a man, when he is about to die, can only regard the five aggregates of his consciousness, regard body and mind as void, If you can only awake to this in a flash and remain free from the remaining entanglements of the triple world, the past, present, and future, he will indeed be one who leaves the world without the faintest tendency towards rebirth. He makes it clear by talking about the seeming void, which is the real realm of the Dharma, as a spiritually enlightened nature without beginning or end, as old as space, neither subject to birth nor destruction, neither existing nor not existing, neither defiled nor pure. What is that? The eternal. What we call the eternal. The Buddha nature. The cosmic Buddha. The true self. God. Doesn't matter what you call it. It is. When we're holding on, it seems void. And it's the little metaphor of the stepping off the curb, you know. You step off into a little void, you step off into a great void. It's still the same essential thing. When he says, if a man can at the time of his death regard his body and mind as void, well, what does that mean? It means release everything into the hands of the eternal. Release everything into the hands of the eternal at that time. And let everything be taken at that time. Everything re-owned by the eternal. The cosmic repo man. Take everything back. If you can, instead of fighting it, if you can make a great bow with the heart and simply say, take me, I'm yours. Take me, I belong to you. Take it all. Then you flash into oneness with the eternal at the time of death. The dewdrop slips into the shining sea. Every time you truly meditate, you do that. Every time you truly buck up and let go, you do that. Lots of little letting goes are great practice for the great letting goes. Reverend Massey used to say, there is no preparation for death like a kensho, because in a kensho, one does that. I remember in 1980, when I was having a great kind of eruption of the water of the spirit, I'd call it, really. And at one point, I knew that my life was hanging by a thread. There was no question about it. Rim Master was with me, and I'm sure she knew it too. I said it, you know, to her at the time. I know my life was just hanging by a thread, and I don't care. I think I said it. Anyway, I truly didn't care. I knew it was hanging by a thread, and I didn't care. It was basically, if you want me now, fine. Well, it turned out no such luck. You know, and that was really the introduction to the most difficult part of my training, the most difficult period of my whole life, the coming years. That's when I really had to start to deal with the karma. And if one has done that, one knows that it can happen again. And indeed it has happened since with me on an even greater scale. I've been very fortunate that way. It's happened 3 times in my life. And none of them was what people call a near-death experience. It was a near-life with a capital L experience. Doesn't make me want to die, by the way. I love life. I'm not anxious to die. I have all the normal fears of death, which you need to have so you don't do yourself in. we're in a time now when we need to really take our meditation, our training seriously. Every meditation counts. Every period of formal meditation counts. Everything we do counts. The attitude with which we go around through the day counts. This is not a time to be hanging on to petty, self-centered objects of clinging. This is not a time to be taking things. There's not a time for self-pity or any form of looking down. This is a time for looking up and really, really offering to the eternal. This is all, by the way, a way of talking about that second column. And I'm always, since I did those talks on Lotus Blossom, it's really got me thinking in terms of the columns in a way I never did before. And what I'm talking about here is that second column. Because what is that second column? But it's releasing everything in a great act of, in an act of willingness into the hands of the eternal. That's the offering. Offer wholeheartedly. It's an offering and it's a letting go. It's a releasing. And we've got to have considerable will in it. And will only goes so far. Our own power of will only goes so far. That's why it's, you know, each of these columns is such a magnificent representation or expression of truth. Because each of the columns, if you remember, each of it has the help pole and the need pole. And they're always in relationship with one another. They're always in relationship with one another. It's only the fifth column that really doesn't have a... Each of the first four columns has the help pole and the need pole. And the fifth one doesn't. The fifth one just is. It transcends all seeming opposites. And the help and need are not opposites, actually. They're two aspects of one reality. They're the master-disciple relationship on the level of the cosmos, the level of ultimate reality. The eternal, the help, is the master, the need is a disciple. We train in the meditation hall, stepping off that curb so that we can live in the free fall with the eternal. We train within the master-disciple relationship, within relationship of seniority in the Sangha, so that we can live within the cosmic master-disciple relationship. And as Durkheim pointed out in the wonderful article I've been talking about, that master, that cosmic master-disciple relationship is right within ourselves. Both the need and the help. Remember, he talks about the inner master. That's the help end. And they're both part of the life of Buddha. In actual practice, there is at times a considerable resistance to that letting go. And that resistance needs a combination of firmness, to be treated with a combination of firmness and compassion. If it's just firmness, it just further terrifies it. And that didn't help. If it's just compassion, it's basically in the end constantly told that it doesn't have to do anything. It's okay as it is. There needs to be both firmness and compassion. Reverend Master used to talk about the resistance. She'd use the example of the difficulty you have with your legs and when you're learning to sit on a cushion or a bench, you know, that you might start to get uncomfortable after, say, 10 minutes. She'd say, you know, for people newer in training, well, when you start to get uncomfortable, don't start fidgeting. Push into it a bit. Keep sitting still. And go another 5 minutes. And then before you're kind of jumping out of your skin, then stop. And the spiritual resistance we encounter has to be treated the same way. You have to be able to accommodate your humanity, and at the same time, you've got to be willing to push into it, and not just cave in front of the resistance. If you cave in front of the resistance, then there is no letting go. Because the resistance is only the product of pain and confusion. What happens is it just the training itself and the results of the training gradually enlighten it until the great letting goes can simply happen. As it's enlightened, the resistance diminishes. Except that at a certain point it will come up as a particularly big way right in front of one, so that it can finally get its full help. But the general direction is in the diminishing of the resistance. This is a time to take meditation seriously. It's a time to take bowing seriously. It's a time to take what we're doing in the temple as our work seriously. Make use of the opportunity that is opening in front of us. But I assure you, there is opportunity opening. As it does so, at times things get much more difficult because something's trying to come to a head and really get some serious help. And this is why I simply don't know what anyone's going to do at this time. I've seen people who seemed incredibly trustworthy and reliable and full of faith flee when they got to where they really hit the big water resistance. And I've seen people who were really struggling with faith, as I have at times, take the huge leap, as I have at times. Let's face it, when do you take it? It's when there is that struggle. And I believe that in the last talk I did, I talked about never giving up on anyone. Well, we should remember that anyone includes ourselves. Don't give up on yourself. If one doesn't, if one chooses to look up and not down, there's nothing that can stop. And there's nothing that can stop you. All the karma in the end is just shadows and unrealities. All the resistance is just confusion and pain. And there's nothing there that the eternal can't deal with quite readily when the timing's right. One of the things that some people live with is a fear that if they've gone through a really dark period, especially a very, really prolonged dark period in their lives, as many people have who come to train, because after all, you have to learn about suffering. Those dark periods are when you're suffering. If you've gone through such dark periods, there can be a really deep fear that if I really keep stepping off that curb, I'm going to come up against that dark period and I'm going to get swamped by it completely. I won't be able to handle it. Well, it's really dangerous to make such an assumption. I'll just point out a couple things about that way of thinking. The first is it does not embody very much faith in the merit of the training one's been doing since one went through that dark period, whatever the most recent one was. Secondly, it doesn't put much faith in one's own capacity. One's not the same person one was a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. There is no enduring self. One might be surprised that one hits the same stuff again, in appearance anyway, and one's not actually, one realizes this time, I can handle this. Most importantly of all, we can so easily underestimate, incredibly underestimate, the capacity of the eternal to help us when we're in our dark, the darkest place, and when we're in our greatest need. We write God out of the equation. We make ourselves really miserable. And there's nothing, in addition, there's nothing like about being miserable about something that actually isn't happening right now, but that might happen one day. Remember, when I was a young monk, Remember, you used to look over at someone at tea now and then, we'd be having a community tea, and she'd look at it, and someone would be sitting there looking down, and she'd say, "Don't worry, so-and-so, it may never happen." And I'd add to that, even if it does, just look up, trust Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and you'll be in a little lifeboat of safety in the midst of the darkness. There is no preventing karmic consequence from coming due when it's time to come due. And we can face it upright, standing upright with an upward looking mind and heart. We don't have to just cave in and sink in despair. If you look at the beginning of Lotus Blossom, what is it Rinpoche Master is deliberating about in those early chapters? Whether she will go with the despair or whether she will look up. You think, oh, well, that's Rinpoche Master Jiu, you know. Well, Rinpoche Master never said that. She never said, I'm someone special who can do it and you can't. Never, never, never said that. Never thought it. That I know of. Every one of us is a Buddha nature that's lugging a package of karma along. And Rinpoche Master was no different. Like I say, I never know what someone's going to do when they come up to that point. I never know what I'm going to do. Presume, being an ordinary person myself, somewhere hopefully in the range of what we call normal, but maybe on some days not in that range, but most of the time in that range. But I figure if I can look up, other people can. If I can sit still, other people can. If I can let go, other people can. And if other people can, and lots of other people do, then I can too. The only thing that stands between us and the eternal is our own opinion of ourselves. And that's an unreality. There is no self to be separate from the eternal. Shuddha Buddha, Shuddha Dharma, Shuddha Sangha.